Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic, no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Upstart, Stamps.com, Candid, and Manscaped. More on that later. Let's get into the do.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpan Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. Listen, the Nightpants Nation Tour is kicking off September 16th through the 18th in Phoenix, Arizona, all right? This is a gratitude tour. Like I said, I've sat in this room for the last year and a half, and now I'm coming out to see y'all, all right? So we got Phoenix, September 30th to October 2nd. I'll be in Indianapolis. I am going to do some dates with Segura, and only ones in 2021 I'm going to do in Vegas, October 8th and 9th. I will be in Baltimore, October 23rd. I will be headlining the Brea California Improv, October 28th. I'll be in Arlington, Virginia, November 10th through the 13th. Cleveland, December 9th through the 11th. La Jolla, December 17th through the 19th. And there's more dates on the calendar already. We got Austin, we got Kansas City, we got Vancouver, we got Edmonton, and we're adding and adding. So please come out, see me, the Nightpants Nation Tour. Wear your nightpants to the show. If you don't have them, we're going to have them. Come out and get your nightpants, y'all. All right? Please make sure you subscribe to the YouTube. Means everything to us over here, all right? It's just a simple subscribe. You love the show. You're watching it. Subscribe anyway, all right? The Patreon continues to grow. I know you guys are seeing these episodes. These promos are out of control. The stories are too. So if you or someone you know has that story that has to be heard, submit it at honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. We do have a lot of submissions, but I promise you we're going through everything. So be patient. Pay attention to your inboxes. Hopefully we get to do an episode together. It's $5 a month, all right? You're also getting the Honeydew a day early ad-free at no additional cost. And you do get access to the entire back library, and you get the audio option as well, all right? All that for $5. But if you sign up for a year, you get over a month free, all right? I got to remind you about the ringtones. They're available on iTunes. I know you guys are snatching them up, probably scaring your pets and friends, but they are available on iTunes. Just go to RyanSickler.com, and you'll see how to get there. You just search my name on iTunes, scroll down to ringtones, boom, they're there. That's it. The athletes. We got the Honeydew athletes, y'all. We've got four coming up on five. We got Marcus Everett, my bow fisherman. Okay, we got Caden Wood, my D2 pitcher. We got Beck Adler, my big wave surfer, and we've got Maverick Reed, my cowboy. Now, y'all know what we do here. We highlight the lowlights. I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. There is nobody I've been wanting to have on this podcast as dark as this next guy, who actually his smile brings a light to my damn face. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time on The Honeydew, please welcome Anthony Jeselnik, everybody. Welcome to The Honeydew.
I feel like just saying it's my first time is pretty optimistic. The idea you would get me here again is...
Listen, bro, you'll get that haircut again in a few months. We'll have you back. We'll work around your schedule. First of all, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I know we go back a ways in comedy. And I'm super stoked to have you on because, like I say, you know people, but we talked about it before that we were recording. Comedy is a solo sport, so yes. You only get to know them so much.
Yeah, but also, like, I think when we kind of started together at the same time, and you were one of those guys, I don't know if you felt this way about me, but if I saw you at a show, I was, like, relieved. I was like, okay, we've got good people on the show.
That's nice. Thank you.
Because we're in a sea of hopeless losers who are never going to make it. And so I would, like, see you and be like, all right, this guy's funny. Like, all right, cool. Like, if I saw you were Segura, I was like, all right, good. Like Jay Larson or somebody was like, okay, like I'm on a good lineup tonight. But
I never know you felt that way about me ever.
Yeah.
No. Because I've sat and had conversations with you about other comedians. And when I leave, all I think is, what the fuck does he say about me? My God. hot. I don't want to know.
Nothing bad.
I believe you, dude. Yeah, always. I mean, look, I can I tell you this though? You know, I always talk about you. The two jokes that always stand out in my head, and I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it because they're so fucking good. And it's what I remember, and it's literally the World Cafe. It might be the first time I met you, might have been the World Cafe. It was definitely around that time. Mm-hmm. And that was a great Wednesday night because Swardson would roll anybody. And I'd feel the same way, like, okay, this is a good show, you know. I knew back then if I was the best comic on the show, it was a horrible show. Back mm-hmm. then, I knew that, you know. But I believe your joke went, pretty sure my brother-in-law is beating my sister. I don't have proof, but her cooking's gotten a lot better.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Pretty good for years, bro.
I remember I was going to do that joke on Premium Blend. Like the first like TV appearance, I had like, here's my list of jokes. And I've got maybe like 15 jokes. And they're like, you can't tell this joke. And I'm like, listen, this joke is like... This joke works. Like, I understand it's like domestic violence,
and
but
it's
like,
also the way so
it's so
absurd.
Silly and yes. absurd. Like, let me yes. talk to Standards and Practices. And they get me on the phone with these two women on like a speaker call. And I'm trying to convince them that this is funny. And they're like, they're just getting madder and madder. And they're like, I get it. It's like a joke your like uncle would tell who's not very funny. And I'm like, so that makes me mad? And I'm like, no, this joke is fine. And they're like, it's about women getting beaten. And I'm like,
no.
Okay, and finally they were like, you know what? We'll let you do the joke and we'll see in the edit. And I was like, I know what's going to happen. You're about to cut this out. But I will never defend a domestic violence joke against two women ever again. It's like,
really domestic violence because what you say is, I'm pretty sure. There's yes. doubt here in the setup.
Yeah, she may have just gotten better at cooking.
But hey, I know one thing. Cooking's better. Yeah. I'm not saying... Yeah. But I am saying this.
I even think I haven't seen any bruises. You know, it's like there's nothing like if the only evidence is her cooking's gotten better. That I was like, no
she
one's
might
getting
have just discovered garlic.
I was like, no one's getting beaten in that joke. You know what
at
I mean?
All.
Like,
you're not all. Sure. Nobody. Yeah. But people are eating well. And that's mm-hmm. I mean, come on, man. So that was the one I really loved. And I, like a moron, was at a writing gig and I told that joke and there were three women in the group who might have been on that same call and did not find, and I was like, nah, listen, they were like, we don't want to hear it. I was like, all right, I'll just go.
Oh, anytime I've been like in like a car or something, and like the driver's like, what are you, you're a comedian, like tell me a joke. It always goes so, so badly. Like, unless you like get to see the whole movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're just like,
of course.
Here's a scene of someone getting murdered. They're just like, this is horrifying. But if you like watch
that
the
guy
movie,
raped nine kids, you're yeah. like, oh, okay, justified.
Yeah. yeah.
The other one too that I tell, I still tell it is, and I'm close on this one, I think, is I told my mom that when I turned 18, I wanted to get a motorcycle. And she said, absolutely not. That when my uncle was 18, he died in a horrific motorcycle accident. And I could just have his.
I mean, your timing is way off, and the wording's not perfect. But people get the point. Yeah, that was like my first joke where I was like,
that's
oh,
what
maybe
I remember
I'm good
then.
At this.
Yeah,
yeah, that was the first one that was like,
that's
oh,
what
this
turned
is...
me on to you. I would sit in the back of the World Cafe and be like, who the fuck is this guy? You've always reminded me of like this, like a dark Stephen Wright. Mm-hmm. You know, and you did it your way. I remember hearing a story about you submitted your jokes for your half hour. You didn't even shoot. You just – because it's one after the other. You just wrote them and submitted it that way, which I don't think anybody
no.
had ever not only done. If they did, they probably looked at them like, who's this fucking moron?
They would, because they would take the tape and then they would transcribe it themselves. And I was like, let me just do that for you. Yeah. I know exactly what I'm going to be saying. Here you go. That way they couldn't – like if they – that way if they got mad about a joke, I would say if you heard it – you would be okay with it. And they'd be like, okay, you can put it in and we'll edit around, whatever. But like, I remember my half hour, they edited out the motorcycle joke.
It
was my second joke.
It?
And I was furious. I was like, that's one of my best jokes ever. And you took it out for time? Right. For yeah. time? Like, oh, the half hour. God damn.
All right, enough of that. I just want to tell you how, you know, we do go back a ways. And I remember mm-hmm. that's made an impact on me as joke writers go out there. And you're absolutely at the top of the fucking list. So please, after all that, promote, plug, everything you'd like.
I'm just running around town doing sets, trying to build up the next hour. But I've got a podcast of my own called JRVP, the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project. With my best friend from college, Greg Rosenthal, who's an NFL analyst, we started doing a podcast, like at the NFL Network. Like they kind of snuck me in, and it was like every week he was about to get fired because of what we talked about on the podcast. And then
they
kicked us out.
They did.
And we started doing it on our own as the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project with All Things Comedy. And it's been great. We're about, I think I'm taping episode 118 tonight.
Damn, all right.
But yeah, we enjoy
it. I remember when you did, when did it switch for you where you're like, okay, I need to podcast? What was the switch for you when you're like, all right, I got to do this?
It wasn't a need. It was a, let me do something with my friend. And Greg has a podcast called Around the NFL that does really well. So it was like, okay, we can like work together in a way that it's like not, I'm carrying him. Like he brings something to the table.
Yeah, I definitely know who he is. I'm an NFL fan. Yeah. So.
And then when I got a deal with Comedy Central for like a bunch of different shit, like a show and other things. And the podcast was one of it. And they overpaid by like an insane amount. So I was like, all right, let's go. Let's do this. And it was like to get the TV show.
That's
I didn't
why they're
care.
A production company now.
And then when the Comedy Central imploded and everything went to hell, then it was the pandemic. And I'm like, well, let's keep this. Let's find another studio to go through and keep it going. And now I truly enjoy it. It's a lot like the Jeselnik Offensive was, where we highlight, we talk about our week and our friendship. And then we talk about like stories from college. And then we talk about just like the craziest news stories of the week. Like tonight, we're opening with this. I don't know if you heard about this woman who was on a Zoom call, like with her, like a business, and
she got shot.
She gets shot.
I keep
and
looking
then
for the video.
She goes down, and then it's just her toddler standing behind her holding the gun.
No,
like everyone can see it on the Zoom. That I'm just like, we're talking about this. This is the main story. Because if you're on a Zoom call. And like if I'm talking to you on a Zoom call and you drop and I see a toddler behind you with a gun, I'm looking behind me. Yeah. I'm like, maybe they've risen up.
They're all here. Like,
maybe they're coming for all of us. But you don't know. But I love that. Like I just find the absurd angle in a dark story and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I want to talk to you about your upbringing and stuff. But real quick, where did you go to college?
Tulane University.
Okay, down in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Then. All right.
Yeah, that was a hell of a time.
So you went from Pittsburgh to New Orleans. That's probably a culture shock.
A huge culture
shock.
Or had
you been down there already to know?
I had never been. Okay. Like, I rarely left Pittsburgh as a kid because I was the oldest of five kids. So it was hard to travel. Like, we didn't go on, like, spring break vacations and stuff. Like, Ocean City, Maryland, you know.
Bro, white
for
trash.
2 weeks every
okay.
summer.
Okay. All right. So are we.
Hold on. No, you weren't. Well, 2 weeks. We only got one.
But we would go during hurricane season because it was cheaper. So half the time. And I was like, we have the
You're
worst luck.
A two for one.
I'm like, our family has the worst luck with vacations. Then I realized, no, the end of the summer is when this happens. That's why we got a deal on the place.
That's awesome.
And
pack up the car. Hurricane Sandy's coming. Yeah. Oh my God. Then you guys go on vacation.
Yeah. But I never saw New Orleans until I went down for my first day of school.
Oh my God.
I just knew it was going to be, from what I had seen in pop culture and stuff, I just knew New Orleans, college in New Orleans was going to be the best 4 years of my life. And I was right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You loved it.
Loved it. The fact that I graduated in 4 years was a goddamn miracle. Like, during my graduation ceremony, like, I'm having my parents meet my friends, and they're like, everyone's just like, I can't believe you graduated. Like, I just can't fucking believe it.
What's your degree?
I was a lit major.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let's go back. So you're one of five, mm-hmm. born in Pittsburgh. What
oldest
did your
five.
Parents do?
My dad was an attorney.
You're the youngest, you said, of
I'm
five?
I'm the oldest of
oldest.
Five.
Okay.
My dad's an attorney, and my mom was just a housewife because she was just raising all these kids. They had five kids in 7 years.
God damn.
Yeah.
Are any of them twins?
No.
Holy shit.
No. Like a year and a half between each one of us. It's like me, three girls, and then my brother's the youngest.
Like, I don't know if you know this. It's... You know, there are billions and billions of people, so you would think it's easy to have a kid. But when you really want to, it's not always so easy. So to have five in 7 years, I mean, God damn, your dad's fertile, or your mom, or both.
I assume it was a team effort.
Yeah.
But yeah, my dad's Catholic, wanted a big family. My mom came from a big family, and they just wanted to keep cranking them out. And I can't believe, like, I always hear people who have kids, they're like, one is great, two is manageable. Once you go to three... It's like your life is a living hell because you don't have enough people to handle everybody. That having five is just unimaginable.
What were you in the 80s? Are you an 80s baby?
I was born at the end of 78.
Think about that.
Yeah.
70 fucking eight. And then next – from 78 to 85, there's seven – or five of you coming in. Holy shit.
I mean, I think about it now. Like, I remember my dad – like, I'm 42 now. I'm like, when my dad was 42 – I was in like seventh grade. Imagine having a seventh grader. like right now.
Listen, my dad was 42. He died, so I've outlived him.
My dad would have traded places with him
all the time right now, though. He had traded places.
And I'm like, oh, that lucky son of a bitch.
That lucky son of a bitch. I think about it all the time. I'm 48. I'm like, all right. Huh, I outlived my dad, but I have a 6-year-old. You know what I mean? My dad, these guys were in their, what, probably 20s when they started having kids for your dad, or maybe early 30s?
Yeah, I think, yeah, like late 20s for my dad, early 20s for my mom. Yeah,
that's pretty quickly. I mean, that's young. You know, you look back at it now, you're like, man, we're anchoring down. But
I think it's a good choice. You either do it early and like crank them out, and so we can be like, you know, we can have our freedom later on, or you do it late, and that's just the rest of
it. I tell my daughter's mother all the time, like, why didn't you just tell me you wanted a kid and wanted to redecorate your place? Mm-hmm. I probably would have said, yeah. Mm-hmm. You didn't need to move me in, kick me. You didn't need to do all that. Yeah. I'd have paid for some paint and some pillows. You know what I'm saying? I'm not an asshole. But also, if I'd known it was going to go down like this, I would have done that shit in my 20s. You know what I mean? I would have young knees right now chasing a toddler and shit. But so you're the oldest of five, and what was it? Are your parents still together?
Yes.
Are they still alive?
Still alive, still together.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. And what was it like being the oldest? Were you made to be responsible, or were they just hardest on you, or how was it?
They were harder on me than everybody else because my sisters were like beautiful girls, but just like kind of a little crazy is the wrong word, but they were rambunctious. And so my parents gave them a lot of grace, but were always chasing them around. And they expected me to kind of wrangle a little more. And I was very protective of my sisters. If they ever got into a fight, like I was there, I was dealing with like trying to keep older guys from sleeping with them in high school and younger girls from trying to beat them up. But I wasn't a great like example. I wasn't like setting the example. I wasn't like a great babysitter. That I think my parents were just kind of like, why are you like this? And I definitely got the harsher punishments. Like I was just grounded a lot as a kid, where once I left, like people had free rein because I think I was just a difficult kid to raise.
So what? Like, what's the age of your sisters under you then? Like, how close?
Like,
years?
About a year. This is about a year and a half in between each of us.
Okay, so
my youngest brother is 7 years younger than me.
So when you're a senior, they're junior and sophomore then.
I had two sisters. And one sister was a freshman. One was a junior, I believe, when I was a senior or a sophomore. So, yeah, I was only in high school with two of them.
And were you active in sports?
I played lacrosse in high school. I liked lacrosse a lot. Swam for a couple years before that. I was terrible at baseball, terrible at football. Like, I loved backyard football, but once I got put on the pads and they're like, you're a lineman, I was like, I hate this so much. Like, nothing to do with this.
You should have never been a lineman.
No, but I was like six feet tall, you know, at that age, that they just threw me in the line and I hated it. Like, who do you block on this play? And I'm like, the same guy on every play? Like, the guy right in front of me, and they're like, no, man, you're not getting in the game.
You're supposed to slide to your left, bro.
Yeah, I had no idea how it works.
So what age do you start, did you act out? You say you weren't a good student. When you say you weren't a good student, was it just – because a lot of people tell me that, but we're defined by letters on our grades. Just because you didn't test well or whatever – you know, was school easy for you and it wasn't enough to entertain you, or was it actually difficult for you?
It was just, I was bored and I didn't understand why I had to deal with science and math and stuff. And I just, I ran my mouth, you know, like I started a Montessori school. My mom, like one day I'm like hanging out with my mom. My mom's my best friend and I'm a little kid. And she's like, hey, do you want to go to a place where they have like scissors and paper and colored pencils and you can play? And I was like, yeah, let's do that. And then she just drops me off at Montessori school. And for the next 4 years of my life, I'm doing this. That I was like, fuck, I would have said no if I thought I would have waited until kindergarten.
Yeah.
But by the time I got into first grade, I could read better than most of the kids in the class. But they said Montessori school, I was such a problem. Like I was just distracting all the other kids. The only thing that would calm me down was to read to me. And they had like the principal had her father come in, like an old retired guy would come in and just read to me for like 2 hours a day. No matter what it was, just me. I would just sit there and I would like let the class have peace and listen to whatever. I just loved reading and books. And then once I learned how to read, that was kind of my outlet. So I was like this. I was the class clown in honors classes. So it just drove people nuts.
Gotcha.
But like I remember one year I failed math. I failed second semester of honors calculus. And I've got to go to summer school. And I assumed it's like I'd never been before. I assume it's like somebody's teaching you math. And they're like, no, here's the textbook. Go through. like do the homework just so you learn the stuff. And when you say you're ready for the test, we'll give you that test and then you go on to the next chapter. And since it's the second semester, I've got to start at the beginning. I can't just learn from the second half. So I'm going through and I'm like, the quicker I do this, the quicker I'm out of here. And I ended up getting like an acing this shit. Like once you actually do the work, like aced it in 2 weeks, an entire year's worth of math.
Holy shit.
And they just gave me a passing grade instead of, and I didn't get it, change my first grade first semester. But I was like, oh, I could be good if I just applied myself. And that's what drove everyone crazy. It drove my parents nuts. They're like, you can do all of this. You're just choosing not to. But I used my time to read. I really liked creative writing. I got good grades in that. But I was a problem, and I realized early on that if I made the teacher laugh, you couldn't get in trouble. If I like just popped off in class and the teacher's like mad at me, it's like you're going out in the hall. But if the teacher laughs, it's like, fuck, Anthony, like, okay, like we'll give that to you, but like please just let me do my job.
Yeah,
that I don't think teachers loved me. Some did, but a lot were like, oh, this guy's ruining my life.
So you were a problem, but just for school. Were you getting arrested or no. Nothing? None of that.
No,
so just
never. Maybe like they'd catch me with cigarettes or something, you know, or like a can of beer, but nothing bad. You know?
So did you ever get caught with that in school, cigarettes or a can of beer? Because I had a kid one time, George Wilk. I'll never forget this. This motherfucker brought a six-pack of Moosehead beer. That's the only time I've ever had Moosehead and put it. So we had these lockers and all of us would do the thing where – you know, it was three numbers, but we would do the first two. So in between classes, you only had, you know, like a minute and a half. You'd run by, you'd turn it to that one number, pop it open, throw your shit in. And he at 2 o'clock, he's got a six pack. There's a six pack of Moosehead sitting in my locker because all you had to do was open up the thing and then flick the top little lever open. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I didn't want to get it out. Like I was scared. You know, yeah. I ended up getting it out in my backpack and hustling that shit out. But man, it scared the fuck out of me.
Oh, I never would have. Like there was that group of kids who like smoked in the bathroom or like smoked outside, but they weren't my friends. I barely smoked weed until I was well into college because it just like it was either like the jocks or the deadheads.
Yes,
and I didn't really fit in with either, but I was definitely much more of a jock than a deadhead.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
Like my senior year, we voted on what our class song was going to be. And the winner by a large majority was Jammin' by Bob Marley. And I would be furious. Every morning they would play it before the announcements in school. And I was like, these fucking hippie motherfuckers like jacked my whole senior year.
Let's take a quick break and tell you about our first sponsor, Upstart. If you're carrying a credit balance month after month, it can feel like you're in a never-ending cycle of debt, and Upstart can help you make that final payment so you can get ahead. If you dread looking at your credit card statement, you're not alone. Debt can feel crippling, but Upstart can help you on your path to financial freedom. Upstart is the fast and easy way to pay off your debt with a personal loan all online. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get one fixed monthly payment. I say it every time. I know you guys are using it. That's why Upstart keeps coming back. You keep emailing me, telling me the great rates you're getting, and I'm excited for you, man. I wish I had something like this back when I was in debt. Upstart knows you're more than just your credit score and is expanding access to affordable credit. Unlike other lenders, Upstart considers your income and current employment to find you a smarter rate for your loan. And with a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate upfront for loans between $1,000 to $50,000. And you can receive your funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/honeydew. That's upstart.com/honeydew. Don't forget to use my URL to let them know I sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, your income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/honeydew. Our next sponsor is Stamps.com. Are you still going to the post office? Are you still paying full price for postage? Well, thanks to Stamps.com, you don't have to anymore. You can mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. You can send letters, you can ship packages, and you can pay less, a lot less, with discounted rates from USPS, UPS, and more. Shout out to UPS, Baltimore Hub, Primary One, Joe Avenue. Stamps.com saves businesses thousands of hours and tons of money every year. All right, Stamps.com brings the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS right to your computer. It's a must-have for any business, whether you're a small office sending invoices or a side hustle Etsy shop shipping out orders or just navigating this hybrid work life. Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. I tell you guys, when I used to do the Crab Feast and we would ship shirts out back then, we used Stamps.com all the time. I would personally sit there, weigh them on the scale, print it out on the labels, boom, send them out. It was great. It's so easy. I never had to go to the post office, ever. You just simply use your computer to print you official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any packages, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. Once your mail is ready, you schedule a pickup or you drop it off. It's that simple. With Stamps.com, you get discounts up to 40% off post office rates and up to 66% off UPS shipping rates. Not to mention Stamps.com is a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, saving you time and money. It's no wonder nearly 1 million small businesses already use Stamps.com. Stop wasting time going to the post office and go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk. And with my promo code Honeydew, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. There's no long-term commitments or contracts. So just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Honeydew. That's Stamps.com, promo code Honeydew. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Now, let's get back to the do. So you told me you got into a little bit of trouble in school.
Yes. Okay. So I would get into trouble. And the thing was, like, when I made jokes, when I was the class clown, I was kind of like I am now, where I wasn't just like making fun of like, you, I can see your underwear. I was like doing dead baby shit back then.
Yeah, I believe.
That like freaked people out. That they were like, this is a problem. And like,
let me stop you and interrupt you just to ask you this. Do you have any memory of something you said to a teacher where you got them to laugh and they let you slide? Do you remember
it? The only one I remember, like, specifically, because it was like the first time it happened where it was like an aha moment. I'm in second grade, and this one, we're like doing show and tell, and this one girl stands up and says, my family and I are moving, we're leaving like Pittsburgh, and we're going to, and I forget what the city was, but it was some like total shithole. Like Billy Joel like wrote a song about it and then was like, it's too mean. It's too, that's too mean. Like, I'm not gonna, I'll do Allentown instead. And she keeps going on and the kids are all like, ooh, wow. Like as she's going to Europe. And I just go like, send us a postcard. And the teacher starts laughing and is like, calls my parents to be like, this was like, I'm not mad. This was so funny that he said this. And then I realized like, oh, that's the best.
That's great, dude. Yeah. That's great.
But a lot of sarcasm and a lot of dark, dark sarcasm, you know.
But always pushing the boundaries within school and that sort of place.
Yeah, like doing the things that would like make my friends laugh. That, like, you shouldn't be saying that, but I'm saying it anyway. Like, I would just do it in class, thinking that it was like smart enough to be okay. And I didn't realize how much I was freaking people out. Like, and I have to like preface by saying, like, this was before Columbine. My school experience is very different if I go to school after Columbine.
I'll bet you all of ours was.
Then,
yes.
Because then it was like, if you're the weird one, like, people are extra concerned, and they weren't like quite like that. And I wasn't dressed in all black either. Like, I wasn't one of those. But I was definitely like, a lot of my jokes were violent. You know, if I was doing a report for school, it was on something violent that happened.
That you would write about that.
Yeah. And I would get into detail. Like, she was tied to a post and raped every day for like 4 years. And then she was pregnant. They lit her on fire. Like, isn't it crazy? The teacher's like, I'm like, it was in the news. Like, yeah. I didn't make it up. Right, yeah. This isn't creative writing, but it was like this is uncomfortable. I'm like, that's Bosnia, man. They're fucked up.
That's Bosnia. That's how you end a report. Thank you, Anthony. That's Bosnia. All right. So what did you do? What happened?
Okay. So the story, like the story that, I mean, it really is a formidable thing in my life that I've even like thought about talking about it on stage, but I'm like, it's almost too real that, not that I wouldn't want to make it funny, but that like, I don't think people would even believe me. So like go back a little bit before. It's like, let's say I am 11, 12 years old.
Okay.
And I'm visiting Mississippi. I'm visiting my grandparents in Mississippi with my entire family. And one day we go to like a flea market. Like, my parents want to go antiquing, and they just hand each kid $20 and they're like, go do your thing. And there's nothing for a 12-year-old boy there. I remember there was like one stand that had like Nazi memorabilia, like in the thing, and I was like, this is like, should I buy some of this just to like, as like a crazy thing? Not that I had any Nazi tendencies, but like, that's a fucked up thing to have. But it was like this giant black guy behind the glass that I was like, this is a trick. This is like, you're coming in, I'm gonna be like, hey, how much is that? And he's just gonna like smash me in the face. So I'm like, okay, that's off limits. And I'm walking around, and there's like a guy in the back who has knives. These knives lined up under a glass case. And I don't mean like pocket knives, like utility knives. This is like a fucking Rambo knife. That's like
I remember, huge the survival blade, knife.
Huge survival, like
is it blade? The screw-off cap with the compass on the top, not, and all the knife, the
not
matches,
that, but it had
shit.
Like a grip, oh. And then a thing that you could hit that would take the knife into the middle so you could like punch knife people with it. It was insane.
Wait,
it was huge.
The blade would swivel
into the front like it was on a grip.
God damn.
And it was just huge. Like it was like nothing you would ever take with you unless you were going hunting.
Okay.
But it's $20 with the case and the sharpener, and I'm like, great.
Sharpener, he's throwing it.
I buy it. No one ever asked me what I bought at the thing. I just put it in my backpack. Don't tell anyone. And I bring it home, and I just like show my friends when they come over, because it was like,
how'd you hide it?
I had a little hiding place in my. I lived in the basement.
But I mean,
at this
getting
point.
It back. Well, how'd you hide?
Because we drove, so I just stuck it in my luggage, and we wouldn't have to worry about an airplane or anything. And it just stayed hidden. I never even took it out when I went out with friends. Like, remember reading The Outsiders?
Yeah.
In school. Mm-hmm. Like after that, every kid wanted a knife. Everybody wanted a switchblade or some kind of knife they would carry around.
Switchblade was
no one ever would fight with it. You would throw it in the bushes if somebody came to fight you. But this was too big for that. That I just like kept it just like locked away. And then got to like eighth grade. I truly like, I just want $20. I want to buy this girl I'm seeing at the time a CD. And I want to say the CD was Color Me Bad.
Love it. I saw them live in concert.
She was a big Color Me Bad fan. It was either Color Me Bad or Paula Abdul.
Listen, bro, that was the concert. I took my cousin to the Cap Center. It was Paula Abdul, Color Me Bad, and somebody, I don't remember who the fuck the one was. I can't even believe it.
Yeah, I was like, I need to buy this CD. I would walk to the mall, and I'm like, I just don't have $20. So I ask my friends who are all like have seen this knife. I'm like, does anybody want to buy a knife? And my friends had more money than me. And one guy's like, yeah, I'd love to. And I'm like, okay, I'll bring him to school tomorrow. During lunch, we'll go in the bathroom. I'll show it to you, $20. During lunch, I bring it in. We go into the bathroom and he sees it. And as I'm putting it away, a seventh grader walks in the bathroom and just sees it for like a split second where I'm like, did he see anything? I don't know. But he turned around and walked right out.
You're not in a stall. You're just out.
We're just out. I mean, I don't know why you're in a stall.
Yeah,
but it was like, it was literally just like a second. Like, here, look at this. It wasn't like he was like testing it out on shit. And I get the $20. I go back to lunch and the principal comes up to me. He's like, Anthony, let's talk. And he's got kind of a smile on his face.
That quick.
Like the kid went right to the principal and was like, hey, Anthony's got a knife. And he's like, you know, we're not allowed to bring knives to school. And I'm like, I know. Like knowing like you can search me, there's no knife. And he's like, someone saw you with the knife. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to lie to you. I brought it here. I was just selling it. I sold it to a friend. And he's like smiling because it's not like I attacked someone with the knife or they like I was going to get in a fight later and I had this knife. And he's like, who'd you sell it to? I'm like, I can't tell you that. But what I will do is I'll go back to the guy, get it from him, give him his money back and give the knife to you. And he's like, okay, just give it to me. It doesn't have to go any further than this. But if you want it back, your parents have to come and get it. Which is, I'm like, yeah. Keep the knife. Enjoy it.
Yeah, right.
I'm never doing this. So I go in and get it.
My friend, boar hunting with it.
My friend understands. He's happy I didn't sell him out. Give it to the principal. He's like, thank you. An hour later, I get called down to the office. And he's like, I'm sorry, but in the past hour, everyone has found out about this. Teachers are asking about the knife. They want to see the knife. Anthony has a knife. What's going on? We have to suspend you. And at the end of the suspension, we have to have a meeting with your parents. And I'm like, oh,
guess
like,
I'll keep the knife.
Like, I'm like, all right, man, like, this is going to be tough. Like, but I go home, my parents pick me up and they're like, a knife. And everyone's assuming like a pocket knife.
Of course.
You know, everyone's assuming
you're in eighth grade. Yes. A little one blade out. Yeah. Not the swivel fucking gutter here.
And I'm like, listen, I just came to sell it. Wanted to buy a CD. And they're like, okay, like we're going to go in and have this meeting. And like, well, I'm sure we'll talk about it and we'll figure this all out. It'll be fine. And a week later, I go in and they like maybe wear like a suit and tie into this meeting, which is like really weird. I walk into a conference room and it's every teacher I've had for the past 2 years.
No way.
In the room, sitting around this table, and they all have legal pads in front of them. and the knife is in the middle of the table. And everyone realizes how big this fucking knife is.
Like, so your it's parents just hadn't been seen it or...
No, my parents hadn't seen it. They're just like, that's the fucking knife? This sword?
Yeah.
Like, where did you get this? And I like tell them, like, at that flea market in Mississippi, like, years ago. Like, this is, I'm sorry, but this is just, like, what I did.
This is what I do with my 20.
And, and so they're like, we're concerned about Anthony. And I'm like, listen, I brought the knife to sell. I didn't want to hurt. I'm not a fighter. Like, I'm not a problem like that. And they're like, yeah, but you make a lot of violent jokes. And I'll never forget the guidance counselor who's sitting next to me says, you know, Anthony, when you make these jokes, a lot of your people laugh. But if you look at their reaction after they stop laughing, they're afraid of you. And I'm like, and the problem is, you know, like,
not my problem.
Like, that's cool. Like, that's why I'm not getting picked on. Fine. And then they go around and they're like, each teacher would like to say something. And they literally have written down anything, any way I've misbehaved. And it's like teacher that I haven't seen in like, I haven't been in class with them in like a year and a half. The fucking gym teacher is like listing out things. And I'm like,
what are you doing
gym
in gym
teacher?
Class?
He was like, that I was like joking around, like sagging my pants. You know what I mean? Like as a joke. Like being like when like yeah, when like crisscross was like the thing, yeah. Like just doing that, like messing around. He's like, he broke a street hockey stick one day. And like as if I was doing like over someone's head, it was like, no man, I just didn't know
and
how to do a slap
to
shot.
Stab
like,
people.
Yeah, I was like, I wasn't fighting
get
anyone.
Get better
like,
equipment, you fuck.
And then like he wrote this creative writing story where a guy gets murdered, and I'm like, I'm not allowed. Like the first thing they teach you in literature class is author does not equal persona. You know, there's a reason they didn't like fucking throw Edgar Allan Poe in prison. There's right. a reason Stephen King gets to walk around. And I'm like, why am I getting yelled at for this? The Bosnia report. They're like, he talked about this and detailed this. And I'm like, the whole point of that was like, we talk about the Holocaust as like never again, but like it's still going on very much like in
well said
in a lot of different places. Like that was the point of this report. Why am I being shamed for this? And my parents are humiliated. Like I'm more upset,
but
for
you're
my
not crying.
For me.
You're defiant. I'm not are you crying. Defiant?
I'm defiant. But when I would get into like in trouble, I was smart about it. I wouldn't be like, "Well, fuck you." Right. I was like, "You're 100% right. I accept my punishment. I won't do it again." And then I would just go do whatever I want. But in the moment, I'm going to be like, "Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay,
take my lumps and
but,
do what I want."
But as they go around the room, it's just more and more humiliating that I'm just in shock at a certain point.
How many people would you say really get the sound off in this thing?
At least 10.
Oh my God.
You'd be like math teacher, science teacher, lit teacher, like gym teacher in like in 2 different years. So they're going on and they're like kind of riling each other up to like top each other with different things. And each one of these I'm like shocked by. And they wouldn't have
called
me.
Do you remember them?
I remember like the ones that I've told you, but they were all just very like simple. Like he made fun of this kid in class and said he would kill him. You know what I mean? Mm. Like just dumb things like that. But it just got worse as it just kept going. And people are like, oh yeah, I remember this thing now. Like you reminded me. It was just completely humiliating. Every once in a while I just look up at my parents and they're just like taking this beating. And they were good parents. Like there wasn't like, they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't deserve this like list of everything. Sounds way worse when you add up 2 years
sure.
into a greatest hits package
yeah.
than this. And again, the knife
that's
is still
like
on
this
the
show.
Tape.
People always tell me like, I've never laundry listed my trauma before. And as I'm writing it, I look back, I'm like, I lived through that. I'm like, yeah, you lived through that.
Yeah. So at the end, they're like,
So wait, can I ask you one question? Sure. Is there anyone in that room, a favorite teacher that's there to at least say, I know he's a good kid, or anyone on that side of the fence that's like, look, I don't want to ruin this kid's life here?
No one ever said that. But there were teachers that liked me more than others. Mm-hmm. But like, I remember my literature teacher who was there that I thought like she's going to have my back, could not take her eyes off the knife. Like couldn't look me in the eye because she's just like, yeah, well, she's just like imagining me in class running around with this thing. And I'm like, that was not what I was here to do. And it doesn't occur to me enough to be like, guys, I was selling it. Like, why am I in trouble for this? If I had done this off school property, this would be no problem at all. Like, I understand the word got out, but like, why are you making my parents listen to this shit? But at the end, I'll never forget this. They're like, we think you might benefit from therapy. And my family was anti-therapy. Like, I've been seeing a therapist now for 8 years, and I fucking love it.
Me too, yes.
But at the time, it was like something was wrong with you if you were in therapy. And they're like, do you think you need therapy? And I look at my parents, and they're just like,
really?
Yeah, they were just like if I had said yes, they would have like gone through with it. But they're just like hoping that I'm like, no, like, you guys, I'm misunderstood. I don't have a problem. I mean, and I wasn't like, a sad kid. I was just aggressively dark and funny. And they're like, I'm like, no, I don't think I need therapy. And the guy next to me was the guidance counselor, who was kind of like the good guy in the room for me, you know, kind of like protecting me, even though he probably organized this fucking thing. And he goes, well, Anthony, he goes, I think you might benefit from some discipline. And I was like, am I about to get hit? Like, what's going on? And he goes, what do you think about martial arts? And I just start laughing because I'm like, you motherfuckers want to train me now? Like, you guys
are like,
you can't use the knife, but let's make your hands deadly weapons. And he's like, I practice jujitsu. Like, I'm really into it. I'm learning Japanese. I want to go over there. Like, I take jujitsu. He's like, I can sign you up for a class. And then you and I can, like, go out and practice, like, during school sometimes. We can, like, work on it. And thinking that would be, like, a bonding thing. And I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, this was, like, right after Steven Seagal became a thing.
Yeah, when he just
No one knew what jujitsu was. And all of a sudden, you're just like, this is the baddest motherfucker out there. Like, yeah, I'll be like him. And so they would take me to jujitsu classes. And it was so boring. I mean, it wasn't like, it was the least fun shit ever. But like every once in a while, like once a week, the guidance counselor would come and be like, Anthony, come with me. And I'd like change into my gym clothes and we would like wrestle in the, like, he would like show each other different moves with like arm bars and shit on the mat. And I'd do that for an hour and then come back into class. But it like made things a little bit easier. But I'll never forget that, like, just that humiliation there. And teachers never looked at me the same. Luckily, I was only in that junior high for a few more months and then went on to high school.
Did that follow you to high school?
It followed me in that some people, like in my grade, like thought I was crazy. Gotcha. Like thought I was the crazy one. Like, don't mess with him. He's a psycho. Right. And I almost played into it a little bit. Like, I didn't mind being the crazy one.
Yeah. The jujitsu, though, did you find that that helped you in any way? Like, were you getting anger out at all or no?
No. It was more just like embarrassment from this because it's so, you're not learning cool shit.
Right. You're not and, kicking like, and punching.
Exactly.
And, stuff.
And I'm like wrestling some like kid who's like younger than me. So it's like, am I really doing anything? And I remember, with that, like I would talk to my friends about jujitsu and they'd be like, God, Anthony's so cocky. Like Anthony thinks like he could fight anybody because he's a fucking yellow belt. And
did you get a yellow belt in it?
I don't think I even got the yellow belt. It was like, I missed the day of testing. I was like, I'm out of town. And they're like, well, you got to wait another 3 months. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing this same shit. But we're walking out of an Eaton Park one night. And Eaton Park in Pittsburgh is like the 24-hour, you know, diner where like people go for breakfast and shit and they're open late. And my friends and I are eating one night and we come out and this van pulls out right in front of us and these older kids jump out. They're not like big, but they're older from a different town somewhere. And they're like, who wants to fight? And my friends kind of like back up, but I'm like, I know fucking jujitsu, man. Like, if we got to fight, we got to fight. And the guy goes, you think you're tough? And I go, I didn't say that, man, but, you know, do what you got to do. And he goes like this. Like, just like the fake punch me. And after 6 months of jiu-jitsu training, my response is, eh. Like, I'll never forget putting my arm, like, the chicken wing that would not have blocked anything. It would have just taken it right in the face.
Try.
And the sound I made. I'll never forget the sound I made. And the guy doesn't swing at all. They all start laughing. Eh. Maybe even a little more high-pitched. And the guys just laugh, get back in the van, and drive away. And I turn around and look at my friends, and they're not even making fun of me. They're just like, and I'm like, I can't believe after 6 months of training that that's my reaction, that I never did martial arts ever again. Never again.
Yeah.
I've done boxing and stuff since it's a workout, but like never.
Yeah,
I boxed
as a workout, but that's not the same as some man on the street who doesn't know you, give a fuck about you, and just wants to take your life.
Oh, boxing, when you learn boxing, like the more you learn, the more you like know you just don't know anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, you would think working out would make you better at this. I just know that anyone could kick my ass because I know how things work. Roll up into a ball and curl up. But so after this thing goes on, like my family and I never talk about it again.
I want to talk about that. So they don't make you do therapy. They're really against the therapy.
Yeah, they just thought it meant like they failed as parents.
They failed. So how do they feel about you doing it now?
I did it honestly to try to get rid of the stigma in my family. Like just to be like, guys, listen, I do this. It's great. And now some of my siblings see a therapist. Some don't. My parents still want nothing to do with it. And I'm like, it would really benefit you. Like it's just talking to someone. They're not prescribing me pills.
Yeah. And you also don't have to do it forever. Go do it for 6 months and see how you feel about it, you know, and then maybe you like it. But also that's the thing about therapy is it is like dating. I had a therapist one time, my first session, this motherfucker grabbed a sandwich and started eating. I was like, are you eating right now during this? He's like, yeah, I haven't had dinner. I go, me either. Me fucking either. But I'm not eating here right now. This is my time. Like, but why don't you budget a half hour for yourself before I get here and eat your fucking sandwich?
That would be a deal breaker.
That was the deal breaker.
I've been with my same one the whole time. That I'm like, I wonder if, like, I think she's great. I know friends who see her. I've been recommended by a friend. And once like, oh, she's the best. That I'm like, I assume you're the best, but I don't know. And you don't like cheat on your therapist. It would be like, I'm going to take a break or whatever. But I'm like, I'm just going to stick with you until you retire. And then I'll never see a therapist again.
Right, yeah.
Then
if it works, it works. Yeah. If it doesn't, you got to find one that does.
But I had to like tell my parents, like, it's not me complaining about my childhood. You know, it's not like my family messed me up. They did not mess me up. It's like, how do I deal with stuff in the now? And it's like almost looking at your family and seeing why you do the things you do, but not in a negative light. You know, they'll be like, you know, it's hard for you to relate to your dad because your dad's like an attorney in Pittsburgh. You're a comedian in Los Angeles. But if you look at your dad's life, his father was a railroad worker who went to World War II. You know, and your dad like did the opposite and went to like Notre Dame on a ROTC scholarship and became a lawyer. And now like he didn't follow his dad into the railway. Like you're very much like your father because of this. And I'm like, I realized things like that. So they're like, oh, okay. I'm not just being like, one time my mom didn't get me the birthday present I wanted. Like, it's not about that at all. So I don't think they'll ever do it. But my sister, I have a sister who's gone, a brother who's gone, and they love it. They absolutely love it.
Yeah.
And I don't think they would have ever done it if I hadn't just kind of – I tell everyone they should see it there.
I agree. I preach it on this show. That whole machismo bullshit, like, it blows me away when I go to therapists. And I've been to plenty of them because some of them – there are different types too. Dr. Drew had sent me to this EMDR therapist, which I had never done that type of therapy. The therapy I had done over years is they call talk therapy. I had never done this thing with the buzzing and the work in the sides of my brain and shit. And I was like, whoa, you know, just different things. But still to hear that we as men are a small minority of the people they see, you know, blows me away in 2021 that's still the case. And there's nothing wrong with it. And like you said, it's not about my dad beat me and didn't love me and didn't get enough. I mean, for some people it is, for sure. I was part of that. But now it's let's not live there anymore. We've understood what that is. But to hear that, I think that's really interesting because my grandfather, I was going to say Baltimore, Pittsburgh, very similar types of towns, blue collar, steel back then. My grandfather worked at Bethlehem Steel, went to World War II. And my father was like, nah, he got drafted. But after that, went and worked for Pan Am, you know, didn't want to go just, you know, be handling steel and shit. So, and then I see that and I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be, but I'd never looked at it like that makes us similar. Mm-hmm. I've always looked at it like, well, I'm different than my dad because he did this and I do this. But no, you're not. You're the same because it propelled you to do something different.
Yeah, you're not you're not just going to follow. And like if I had gone and been a lawyer with my dad and like formed our own firm, that wouldn't have been what my dad would have done. You know?
No.
And like my dad was very okay with me not going to law school. Was like that I thought he would have may have forced it.
That's
like
such a fucking interesting
my dad was
guy.
A big Notre Dame guy, and then I was like, are you cool if I don't even apply? And he was like, oh yeah, totally. Like the school.
I don't want my daughter to do comedy. If you had kids, would you want them to be comedians?
Dude, I'll do one better. If I was graduating college right now, I would not get into stand up comedy. I think it's changed so much that like I have kids now, I'd be like, I mean, go ahead and fucking TikTok it up if you want, but like it seems terrible. Yeah. All those TikTok kids seem like they're going off a cliff. Like I can't.
Says the guy who brought the crocodile meat fucking sword to goddamn school.
So like this happens and I try to get over it, but I have this anger from that moment. Like all the anger I kept from school of like them just telling me what to do. Because I feel like school a lot is like we're not trying to teach you, we're trying to like wrangle you until you're 18 and then we don't give a fuck. We're proud if you make it, but like we just need to keep you off the streets kind of and keep you out of our hair.
Let's take a quick break and tell you about our next sponsor, Candid. Now, there's a specialist for just about everything, right? When my car breaks down, I go to a mechanic. When there's a problem with my shower, I call a plumber. So when you want to get your uneven, crooked teeth fixed, you see an orthodontist. They're the specialist. And that's what sets Candid, the invisible, comfortable, and removable aligners above the rest. While poorly reviewed or insanely priced clear aligner companies use general dentist, Candid only works with orthodontists. With Candid, the same orthodontist who created your plan is with you from start to finish, so you never have to wonder how you're doing, all right? Your treatment is prescribed and closely monitored remotely by a licensed orthodontist who's an expert in tooth movement. You can book an appointment at a Candid studio near you, or you can do everything
everything from the comfort and convenience of your own home. The average Candid treatment is just 6 months, and you'll start seeing results way before then, and it costs thousands less than traditional braces. And with your aligner treatment, you get a free Candid teeth whitening. Candid can help you get the straighter, brighter smile you've always wanted. Right now, you can get started from home for just $20 with a Candid starter kit, or you can book an appointment at a Candid studio near you today. Go to CandidCO.com/honeydew and use the code honeydew. All right, that's CandidCO.com/honeydew, code honeydew, CANDIDCO. All right, take advantage of this limited time offer for a $20 starter kit. CandidCO.com/honeydew, code honeydew. Let's tell you about our next sponsor, Manscaped. Attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in a zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code honeydew. All right. I've talked to you about this before, man. I use these old trimmers, man. My balls are tattered. Like, my taint's all banged up, nicked up. Everything hurts. It's bleeding. It's not pretty. You're trying to make yourself look good and you end up tattering your taint. So if you're ready for an out-of-world experience, fellas, look no further than the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped that has just taken off in not only the USA, but Canada, the UK, across Europe, Australia, South Africa, and Singapore. Everybody's getting their balls in shape. Inside this package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, their Weed Whacker ear and nose trimmer, their Crop Preserver ball deodorant, their Crop Reviver toner, their Performance Boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your whole solar system. Abort hairy balls and Buzz Lightyear that Woody with Manscaped. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code honeydew at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code honeydew at manscaped.com. Your dick and balls need some help for a clean Trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you. Now, let's get back to the Duke.
So I go to college. I enjoy college. I come out to L.A. I eventually get into stand-up after about a year. And I still – a lot of my stand-up comes from that anger that I'm like, I got to prove these people wrong. Because they're like, you're wasting your life by making jokes in class. I was like, I'm going to – if I became a lawyer, I would have proven you right. If I did anything else, I would have proven you right that I'm going to become a comic. And I have no plan B in that, like, I refuse to fail at this. I'll find some way to succeed in this business. You can do it through podcasting. You can do it through writing, producing. There's so many different things you can do.
That's right.
But I was very much like, I'm going to be dark because it comes naturally to me. And I'm going to be smart. Because I'm smart, and I'm going to like show you that I can pull this off. And a couple years, like 10 years into stand-up, I get my first TV show, The Justin Lick Offensive.
Great.
I'm working for Comedy Central. Thank you. And at the end of the first season, and the ratings are great, the first season, we're after Tosh. It's doing well. I get in trouble for this thing, this shark party thing that was kind of like I did this bit where I wanted to
– I remember the Boston Marathon trouble.
Yes. So in the middle of the first season, I wanted to do a thing where we celebrate a shark attack.
Oh, okay.
And the point being that like we kill hundreds of millions of sharks a year. We're like driving them to extinction. 8 people die a year from shark attacks, but everyone's afraid. So when the next time there's a shark attack, we're going to celebrate and give you all this information and jokes, but we're doing like a dance. I had like a bunch of dancers out there and like a girl wearing a shark costume giving me a lap dance and like – and it was crazy. But at the end of the bit, we show the guy's picture. And I had asked – I was like, are we allowed to show the guy's picture? And they're like, oh, yeah. You can. Like Comedy Central was like, yeah, you can. And then we did that and it like everything went to hell. Where we thought it was going to be the thing that would like launch the show. And then quickly we had to bear it because New Zealand, where the guy was from, went crazy.
Really?
Because they got it online. They released it online and the rest of the episode, they don't know who I am. You know, I would say like I would joke like if this happened in Florida, Americans would have been like, that's what Anthony does. But because it was New Zealand, they went nuts. So Viacom is hearing from people like why are you doing this? My family is getting threats. Because if you look up Anthony Jeselnik in the phone book, you get my dad. So they're calling him at like 4 in the morning
shit.
with a new New Zealand accent they can't understand.
It's afternoon
yelling
over
at
there.
Him. Yeah. And that happened. And then at the end of the season, I did the Boston Marathon bombing tweet. where this is like a couple days before the show. It's not even on the show. I'm just like tweeting, thinking like this will promote the show.
Oh, the show hadn't launched yet before that tweet?
It was before the last episode. We did it every week. Okay. We would tape it on Tuesday. It would air on Thursday. Or maybe the other way around. And we were just getting ready for the last one. I tweet this thing and then all hell breaks loose. It was like if I had waited 20 minutes, I would have gotten a call from my manager saying like the head of Comedy Central had asked that you don't tweet anything about this today. You know, wait. But I didn't get that message until afterwards.
Well, they got to get up early. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then it was a fight about like you've got to get rid of this. And there's one person in particular at the network who was like furious, who I had never met. Because at the networks, you have lunches with people, you bond so that when they tell you you can't do something, you don't lose your mind. Because as a comic, no one tells you anything. When you have a TV show, it's like all these rules all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And they're like blaming it all on this one person. So I take the tweet down. I feel bad. I feel embarrassed that I've like put my crew in jeopardy, that anything that I'm like, I've put the show in jeopardy with just a dumb tweet that I didn't care about. Although I stand by it. I stand by the joke. I thought I did
the joke
in the right way. And after the season's over, they're like, you've got to have a meeting. We're picking you up for season two, but you've got to have a meeting with this person and like the other people. And I go in and they're like, at first it's going to be like they basically want to yell at you for writing this tweet. But by then it's been like 2 weeks and everyone kind of feels dumb. They're like, the joke wasn't that bad. Like the marathon wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? It wasn't like as crazy. It wasn't 9/11. It was just like, it was horrible, but like people got over it pretty quickly that it wasn't this, it wasn't like George Floyd, you know, that would still be sensitive weeks later. And they're like, you know what? It's more of a glad handing meeting. It's not really going to be, we don't have to talk about this tweet at all. They just want to come in. Like, I think if you meet with this person, they'll see that like you're a good person and everything will be okay. And I get into the meeting and I'm a little nervous. I'm a little like upset. I even have to be there, but it's like five people in the meeting, like the five heads of Comedy Central and like one of my executives.
That's half the amount in this fucking knife meeting. So you're doing good, bro. You're doing good as you grow.
And the guy starts the meeting and he's like, so. Like first I come in and like the one person hugs me and I'm like, why'd you touch me? I'm like, is this everything? Or are we just going to laugh about stuff? And they're like, so like.
Dude, right now I'm hoping you fucking say they put that knife from fucking.
I mean, I might as well, right? I have expected it because they're like, listen, Shark Party was a huge mistake. You know, you shouldn't be doing things like that. And I'm like, motherfucker, everyone was so excited about Shark. You're like, this is going to put the Jeselnik Offensive on the map. Like, this is the different thing we're doing.
Yes, is all the way to
and
the
they're,
top.
They're doing it as if it was like, and I start to get a flashback to being in that room with the knife. Where they're going around and listing different parts of the show. And the one woman's like, you know, one time you mentioned like a guy who'd killed a bunch of kids and then went like this. And like, you shouldn't. And I'm like, you know, like, you're giving me shit about like who I am, like the guy that you hired because he did so well on the roasts and like doing a show. We're talking about these awful things, but you're like still attacking me. Then I start fucking sweating. Like, I'm just getting like more and more grave that I'm like, am I about to quit the show? And no one quits a show after the first season. It's like, I can't walk away from this money. It's like a dumb career move, but I'm eating bags of shit in this. And they're like, they're smiling as they're saying this to me. And all I'm thinking of is I am in their principal's office. Where like I can't talk, like I can't say anything to them. I'm just like, okay, all right. And they're like, everything's good. I'm like, everything's great. Like, let's just get into that second season and get over this. That I was like truly, truly devastated and truly felt like principal's office. Why did you have this meeting? Like to see how mad you could make me. And I even at the end, I go into an explanation of like why I do what I do, like why I make these horrible jokes and how it actually is life affirming. And I'm trying to make fun of like the worst things in the world. And the person in charge is like smiling and nodding. And then a few weeks after this, we have a meeting about season two, what's going to go on. And they're like, what changes are you going to make? And I'm like, well, you know, like the way I explained to so-and-so, you know, we're not making any changes. I thought I explained why I do this and now I can do this. And they go, no. I go, but she was smiling and nodding. And they go, she was just smiling and nodding. You didn't change your mind at all.
That?
And now I'm like, literally like there's a 5 minute pause where I stare at the table and think about blowing it all up. Think about being like, I'm out of here. This is like why I'm going back on the road. This is humiliating. My manager afterwards was like, do you still want to do the show? And I'm like, I can't walk away from this. Too many employees. There's too many people. I can't do it. But it was like, it took maybe like 5 or 6 years to even be able to talk to anyone at Comedy Central again. And now we're friends. Now we're cool. Everything is okay. But it was really like just feeling like going from being like, you're a famous comedian now. You've made it. You've done it to you're in eighth grade. getting shit on by all your teachers and the people who are supposed to be like looking out for you. That it was, I was in therapy about that for years. And like Thoughts and Prayers, my special. The reason the last 20 minutes is about that was because I'm like, I've got to get this shit off my chest and change the narrative. Like people out there think that I got canceled because of Shark Party, the way that the story's told because it's at the end. But it's like, no, I got canceled because the ratings tanked in season two. And I was difficult to deal with because I was just so mad at everybody. Yeah. They didn't want to give me notes because I was so aggressive in taking notes because I just still felt the trauma of that meeting. Where when they talk about that show failing, they talk about that meeting. They're like, that meeting was a mistake. And if that hadn't happened, maybe if I hadn't made the tweet, you know, maybe I would have been in a better mood in season two and it would have kept going. But that was just a backbreaker. It was brutal. And then I kept that anger. And a couple years ago, the school gets in touch with me and they say, we now have an alumni hall of fame we've been doing for the past like 10, 15 years. We would like to induct you.
Tell them to get the seventh grader your ass out to fucking take that bullshit trophy.
But they were like, we want to do this. Will you come to the ceremony if we do it? And I go, oh, fuck yeah. I'll be there.
Hell yeah.
They were like, do you want to talk to the students? And I was like, fuck yeah, I want to talk to the students. Yeah, I'm coming in like a fucking ninja to that thing, man.
I'm killing everybody this time.
But I get up there to talk to the kids and I walk in and like the principals are my age. You know, now it's like a different people.
Are there any teachers that are still there from your time?
No one's there. People showed up for the ceremony at night to like see if they get a shout out or whatever. There were a couple of them that I was like, I remember you and like, thank you for this. And they just come just to see the students, but no one's still there at that school. And the principal's like, you know, there's like 13-year-olds. Because no one gives me talks to me about what I'm going to say or anything. They're just like, you know, there are 13-year-olds in here. And I'm like, yeah, PG-13. I'll just say fuck once. And they're like, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I'm going to say it a bunch.
But then I get up there. I get up there at this podium and I realize these kids are like, they look like Muppets to me. Like, I'm like, I don't relate to you. I thought it would be cool to come back. But they're like, they don't know who I am. Like, they didn't know I was a comedian. They didn't know like I had a TV show. They don't know any of this stuff. So I'm just like bombing in front of a bunch of kids, like trying to tell them to like follow your dreams or whatever. It couldn't have gone worse. And then I'm like, oh my God, take questions. And they're like, this foreign exchange student goes, and I assume he was a foreign exchange student. He just goes like, who are you? And then everyone laughs.
Of course.
And I go, you wouldn't be able to pronounce it. And then the class is like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, let's see. This is what I do. Come on. And then I see the principal like kind of getting closer to the stage. Like, we got to wrap this up.
Trotting up.
And they go, who are you voting for, Hillary or Trump? And this is like in the very beginning of it. And I go, Hillary. And they start going, Trump, Trump. I'm like, kids? Really?
Kids.
And then they're like, this is over. This is done.
There's a Trump chant at your fucking speech.
So I leave. I leave and I go and I come back at night for the ceremony where they give me like a speech about everything I've accomplished. And I get up there and the other people are like there because they're like still good at math and shit, or like an engineer, or like a tennis player who's done something, or a musician who's gone on to something.
But no one that's currently at your level of their respected field.
Yes. Everyone, they were like, keep your speech to 5 minutes. Anthony, do whatever the fuck you want, you know.
Did you go last?
That went in the middle. And the guy after me, his whole speech was about how hard it was to go after me. But I'm like, I appreciate this more than anyone else here. Like, I understand you guys are like, this is nice. But like, some of them were like, we don't give a flying fuck. Like, what do I care what my high school thinks of it? But I was like, you're giving me this for everything you begged me not to do for the entire time I was at the school.
That's right.
Like, I got this by ignoring everything you've ever said to me, ever. Like, thank you. And I called out a couple of teachers that I liked and was just truly thrilled that it, like, all the anger just went away. It was like I just ended up outlasting them and proving them right, that it felt really good. Yeah, and now, like, I've got to find other ways to write stand-up. Because it used to just be like going back to that well.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was full circle.
That's fucking great, dude. I do want to – I want to go a little lighter and hear about this airport story that you told me you had.
Okay.
So we've got just about time for
great.
That.
And this is just embarrassing. This is not dark.
We love this shit.
It's embarrassing. So when I'm on the road, I try to enjoy myself where I can. You know what I mean? Like, I don't drink on the flight to the gig, but on the way back from the gig, I'm in first class. I'm drinking the free vodkas, and I know I get there. There's a car waiting to pick me up. I'm cool, but I get fucked up. And I'm always nice. I would the idea of being like mean to a flight attendant or any of that shit is just like beyond me. That I would
I'm
never
with
do
you
this.
On that. Like, what are you doing?
But I had gotten this weed pen. And it was like this disposable weed pen. It was like this. It's like the most expensive one they had. It's a little vape thing. And you like hit it. And like 3 seconds later, it buzzes. And you blow out this tiny bit of like indecipherable vapor. You get a little bit high. And I'm like telling, I'm like, you got to try this. It doesn't set off smoke alarms. You can smoke it in an airplane bathroom. And everyone's like, oh, wow, cool, Anthony. Like, that's your thing. But I would do it sometimes. I would do it on like every flight almost, even if I wasn't drinking. But this flight, I'm pretty lit up. And we're flying from Denver to L.A. And about the halfway point, and I've gone to the bathroom several times to hit this thing.
And you're at first class, so you're going right up front by the cockpit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right by the cockpit. And again, there's like less people use that bathroom. I'd be more afraid to use one where there's like a line. Because I've hit it before, and I've hit it like a bunch of times and then blown it out and opened the door. And there's somebody walking in there like, what the fuck? But they don't think, like, they don't put two and two together. And okay, no one's going to call you out in first class. But I'm in there and I hit it like just like once or twice. Like not like a, like a, I'm trying to like blow it up in here, but like
I need
a little
just
bit.
Let it go through your I'm nose a little bit.
And I would like, yeah, and I like yeah. I blow like into the toilet as I flush it, and I'm blowing it out, and I'm right about to, I'm like washing my hands, and it just I just hear burr, burr, and it's not and it's like the light's in the bathroom
in there.
And I know it's me.
It's not hey we got turbulence.
I know it's me, yeah. And I'm just like fuck. And I'm just – humiliation is all I'm feeling. And I'm like, if they land this plane, if they ground this flight for me, that will be – this will be the worst day of my life. That like I can't imagine facing people or like inconveniencing people
reported,
like this.
All that, it would be all that.
It would be the worst thing ever. So I open the door and I'm like, maybe this will be fine. You know, because like it's just a little bit of vape. It's not like I'm smoking a cigarette. I open the door and I'm in like seat 3A. It's one of those where it's like I have my own little aisle thing. I just get out and I get in and no one's looking at me. Everyone's kind of looking around like, what's this?
So is it going on through the whole plane?
Whole
too?
Plane.
Not just in the bathroom.
Not just in the bathroom. Whole plane.
And it's louder.
It's loud. Like, so no one's looking at the bathroom. Everyone's looking around like, what the hell? And the flight attendants are in the back with the drink cart. And I just want them to get in the thing and say like, please do not smoke or vape in the bathroom. And one of them runs up into the bathroom and it like turns off the alarm right away. And it's kind of like kind of smells something. And I would have been fine, except I think, let me handle this. And I hit the call button.
Let me take care of this.
I've had a few drinks. I've had a couple hits of this weed. And she comes over and I'm like, hey, I was in there when that went off. Like, I was just washing. I don't know what happened. I was just washing my hands. Why I did that, I have no idea. I assume like it didn't with them looking for me or like I was trying to hide something, like being ashamed. And she's like, uh-huh. Like that fucking thing doesn't go off when you're washing your hands.
Yeah, yeah.
And they walk away and they're just, she's like, what were you doing in there? And I was like, no, I was washing my hands. Walks away and I'm just like, playing a game on my phone. I'm like, I can't ask for another drink. I'm just like,
you're done. Yeah.
No one's really like looking at me too much. And I had just grown the beard. So I'm like, thank God. Like maybe I have this cover. And I don't want to see people tweeting. Just like, just set off the alarm. And they keep going for a little bit. And I'm like, okay, they're not going to land this plane. We're going to go all the way to LA where it's like a 4 hour, it's like a 3 hour flight or something. We're halfway there. They're going to keep going. I'm like, okay, I'm relaxing a little bit. And the flight attendant comes back over and she kneels down. She goes, I just have to ask, you know, what were you doing? Like exactly. I have to ask, were you vaping or smoking in the bathroom? And I'm just too embarrassed to say yes at this point. Like just, I should have been like, listen, I don't want to make your job harder, but like, yes, I was. I hit the vape pen. I'm like, no. And she's like, what were you doing? Like washing my hands. She's like, okay. But in a way that I know she does not believe.
With the rolling lips.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm like, fuck. Like I'm just sitting there waiting for this to land. And then right before, like, we're landing in about 15 minutes, she walks over with a piece of paper. And she said, this is from the captain. And it says, like, you are in violation of federal law for, like, smoking or vaping in a bathroom. You must, when we land, you must, go through this investigation, cooperate with an investigation when we land. Otherwise, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. Is this the punishment? You know what I mean? Is it just like showing me this and then we get off and everything's fine or what? So she comes back and I know that like when I've heard of things going down on airplanes where it's like they're in the news, it's because they're dicks to the flight attendant.
Right.
You know, they get belligerent and I'm like, she walks back and I go, thank you very much. I understand. And then the plane lands and we're taxiing, and the pilot's like, we're about to pull into the gate here. Before anyone gets up, we've got a little business we've got to take care of first. And I like, no, I'm fucked. So I'm texting my opener in the back.
Oh, my I'm God. Like, is your stomach just – I'm getting nervous over
I'm
here.
So
right
like,
now.
I just don't know – and I don't know what I'm in for. Like,
right,
I don't know what's
yeah,
about to
yeah,
happen.
Rested
I'm texting or... the opener. I'm like, hey, I just got busted. It's vaping in the bathroom. Like, I don't know what's about to happen to me, but like we'll see. We pull up. Two cops get on the flight. The pilot comes out. The pilot looks like he's fucking 25 years old. He looks like a California surfer kid. He's smiling. He walks up with the flight attendant. They're talking. I'm sure they were like, how is he acting? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. is this – how bad do you want to be about this? I'm sure they're like, he was nice, whatever. And then the cops get on, and everyone's kind of looking around like, who is this? What's going on? And they come on, and they start yelling, 3A?
No.
3A all
they're
down
right
the plane.
There,
and I'm
though.
Like,
they're
you
right.
know exactly where 3A is.
You know where 3 is, you motherfucker.
Yeah, you could have grabbed me with your eyes closed. And I'm like, yeah, it's me. And they go, get your things and come with us.
Two cops. And are they LAX cops or are these like LAPD cops?
I assume they were LAPD cops like who worked at LAX. So maybe it was like a something in between, but they weren't just like – it wasn't like security guards.
Are you nervous as fuck?
Yes, because I just don't know. And my plan is just to totally come clean.
Look,
like,
I imagine also you're like me. You got your TSA pre-check is probably in jeopardy and all that shit now.
Yeah.
Clear if you have that.
Yeah,
all
like,
that.
Is American Airlines going to kick me off? Like, mm-hmm. what's going on? But I know I'm in first class, so that carries some weight. And I get my bag and I get off and we walk down to this thing. I'm like, where are we going? Am I going into some dark room? Like, are they putting me in a car? And we just walk into the fucking gate, like where everybody else is going to walk out. They just make a guy move his laptop and they pull me aside and they're like, what happened? And I go, I vaped in the bathroom. Like, and I didn't throw away the pen. I didn't try to hide it. I was just like, I vaped in the bathroom, but I'm talking about weed. And the guy's like, mm-hmm. Like, okay, let me see your ID. He's looking at it. And as he's doing this, people are coming off the plane looking at me. So I'm trying to be like, yeah, I know. People. Total misunderstanding. Like, I'm trying just like, if you were like, I'm
if
a bad mind. Yeah, like, if you looked over, you'd be like, oh, he's like, they're laughing yeah. about this now. It must have been, maybe he, like, the cop knew him and was helping him out. And he's like, okay, well, you know, like, you know, it's a 3-hour flight. You should be, a nicotine addiction is a serious thing, but you should be able to. I'm like, oh no, I was coming from Denver, and he's like, nicotine addiction. He's like trying to help
he's
me. Like,
to help
he's
you.
Like,
yeah,
motherfucker,
yeah.
Stop telling me it's weird, and like just takes my ID. He's like, we're not going to punish you. Like, no warrants or anything. Hands me the ID back. He's like, we're not going
to
take
you
in.
They actually ran your name to see if you had any warrants mm-hmm. out, and they did all that. All yeah. Oh, they were waiting on you. Like,
yeah. I think that's
waiting.
Just what they did. They're like, we're going to give you a warning, but in case you're a fucking wanted man, we're going to get you. But I was clean, and he's like, I don't know if American Airlines is going to get in touch and do anything, but as far as we're concerned, like, you're free to go. And at this point, my opener has gotten off. And she's like, she got in the pilot's face and was like, where is he? What? And the pilot laughed and was like, he's fine. He's out there. And I thought about waiting for a little bit to, like, when the flight attendant came off, to go up and apologize, to be like, I know your job is hard. I'm sorry I made it harder. But I'm like, if she sees me with my, like, vodka pot eyes coming at her, she's going to think I'm coming to kill her. That I'm like, let's leave this alone. But then I've got to walk down with my opener and wait for my checked luggage. And everyone is staring at me. Like,
they
people are missing
know.
Their bags are just going around the carousel while they're pointing at me. And I'm like, I think I bought a hat like in the gift shop to wear.
You bought a hat
because I didn't want Anthony Jeselnik, you know, does this that for like a week afterwards, I would be walking around in the streets still embarrassed that like people knew. That anyone knew. Like, I didn't tell the story for a while. And then I told my manager, and she was like, her eyes got like huge. And then like 6 months later, she's making fun of me about it in front of other people. That it was like, it became totally okay. But people are like, do you still vape in the bathroom? I'm like, I don't fucking vape, man. Like, I've
yeah,
never
that
like,
was...
that scared the shit out of me that like, I don't bring anything anywhere, anytime. I don't even drink on planes anymore.
Really?
I drink water. Cause it's like, that would like, that was the dehydration plus drinking was the thing that really like, got to me that once I just started drinking water, it was fine. But after that, like, total humiliation. Just like,
yeah,
I can't
man.
Believe I did this. And thank God, again, they did not divert the plane or land it. Because that would have been, I don't know if I would have flown again. But yeah, I mean, I learned my goddamn lesson. But it was humiliating.
Yeah, I'll bet. I would have been worried that they ban you lifetime flying. Then you're John Madden out there on a tour bus going to all your fucking gigs only. Like, oh my God.
And that's what happened with Segura.
Yeah, totally what happened to Segura. That's why he does it.
Yeah, I didn't know what they were doing with my pre or any of that, but they didn't care. I remember I got back and I texted Ron Funches. And I'm like, you're the only person I know who needs this information. But, because I'm like, you seem like the kind of guy who would also vape in the airport bathroom.
I don't even fuck with that. Yeah.
And I was like, did this happen? They fucking pulled me off the plane, like, didn't cuff me or anything, but like, it was embarrassing. And he goes, good to know. And he goes, like, lucky you got white privilege. And I go, dude, it was first class privilege. Like, white was like, that had nothing to do with it. It was strictly like, you're three rows back. We're going to give you some grace. But yeah, if you're in a situation like that, just be as nice as possible and do not draw attention to yourself and say, let me explain what happened. They're like, we didn't want to know who it was.
That's the truth. We didn't
want to deal with this.
That's why she was like, I have to ask you.
Yeah. Yeah. So stupid. But yeah, that was true. That's the last time I've been like truly humiliated.
Like, and what the fuck are you doing? Mm-hmm. Yeah. In your 40s? This is less than 2 years ago?
Maybe 39 still, at the time. You know, it was my last tour. But yeah, just that, like, you did this to yourself. And again, like, if I would have given anything to turn back time and not have that happen. You know, like, it was just, what a kick in the teeth.
God damn. I would be just, the heat on the inside of my body would have melted me in that fucking seat. They wouldn't have to worry about anything.
You've never seen anyone like so into their game of Bejeweled than I was. Like, I was just sitting there like playing it like anyone looking at me was like, he couldn't have done anything wrong. Look how into his fucking game he is. He wouldn't be just playing a game if, cause I was like too fucked up to read a book, you know?
Oh God. All right, before we wrap this up, I told you when we got in here, advice you would give to your 16-year-old self. I'm curious going back now, especially after hearing your speech for your high school and things, what advice you would give to your 16-year-old self.
It was an interesting question for me because I used to always, like, when I was even struggling as a stand-up, like, you know, in my 20s, when you're just not making any money, you're just doing it, every birthday – I would think – I'm always happier to get older. But every birthday I would go back and I would think, what would – if I went back in time right now to my 18-year-old self, would they think I was cool? And the answer was always yes. You're following your dreams. You're stand up. You've gotten like to do a show with Sarah Silverman, whatever it was. I was like, you would think you were cool.
Fuck yeah.
And then I got to be like 36. And I remember thinking back, like, now I'm double that age. And I go, what do I give a fuck what 18-year-old me thinks about anything, or any 18-year-old thinks about anything? Like, that's stupid. That to go back to a 16-year-old, it's hard to say, like, don't worry about these things, because worrying about it is what made me who I am. It's like if I had been like, forget about school, like don't sweat these small things, everything's going to work out all right, it wouldn't have. You know, if my parents had been more supportive of my comedy and of my writing,
hey, therapy at that moment might have changed everything.
It might have changed things, but probably would have made me more adjusted, and I wouldn't be a stand-up. Like, road got me to where I am today, mm-hmm. I'm happy I was on that road. I wouldn't change anything. So it's almost like I wouldn't fuck with them. You know, I wouldn't tell them anything. But if I was going to tell them something, it would be like,
you're right.
Enjoy it, you know?
I want to say this.
Stevens it up.
Look, I think that is great advice, actually. But I want to say this. When it comes to the 16 and the 18-year-olds, I mean, at least for me, I was a comedy fan back then. I don't know if you are. I know some comedians weren't comedy fans. They just
I was always a comedy fan.
Comedy fan. So when I get young kids that hit me up now, I think, oh, yeah, I was in fucking ninth grade listening to a gray-haired George Carlin, you know, an older Richard. I mean, Eddie Murphy was like the only anomaly that was even relatively close to our age who mm-hmm. was that. But I don't want to forget about us as those kids. Now, the life advice, yeah, but what I do care about is what they think about my comedy.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
I want them to laugh and think it's cool. But if they don't, like, that's okay,
yeah.
too. Like, and they're a little more sensitive these days.
Definitely more sensitive.
That they're that into me. Or some might be. I think my audience is generally older. Luckily, they're older and wealthy, which I enjoy. But
I enjoy
it. I'd heard once, like, stand-up said, like, if you give a comic advice, you're just telling them how to be more like you.
Yep.
Like, someone reached out the other day and was like, hey, I've got a friend who's, like, doing stand-up in Pittsburgh and they want to take the next step. And I was like, listen, man, like, I've been doing this 20 years. Things are way different now. Than it's like, I don't want to tell you not to do TikTok. I would never do that. But I wouldn't tell you not to, because maybe that's your thing, that I don't want to, like, give you bad advice.
Right.
You know, and the advice, I would say, like, the movie Comedian. Watch the movie Comedian, the Jerry Seinfeld documentary.
Yep.
That kind of taught me everything there was to know. That's like a helpful way to be like, just keep writing and working and like embrace failure. I guess I would just say embrace failure And maybe not too much. Like, you want it to hurt, because if it stops hurting, then you're not, it's not going to have the same effect. Like, yeah. I go up with new jokes today, and like they bomb, and that makes me go home and write new ones. That I don't just keep doing the same set of shit that works. That I don't know if that's advice I would give. But
I get it a lot. I get people back home. They're like, what about this? And I'm like, look, this is going to sound like I'm being a dick. But the only way to do stand up is to do it, period. I don't believe in taking a class. I believe if Robin Williams taught a comedy class, we wouldn't have a Chris Rock or a Dave Chappelle, because people would think that's what comedy is. It's an individual thing. What was it for, though?
It's stand up comedy class.
But what was it?
What,
like a basic, like before you ever started comedy, or were you already in comedy?
It was like I'm too scared to go on open mic. Let me do this. Right. Like the guy had written a book,
Greg Dean. I went
and
to
took
the
his
first
class,
one.
And then I did the second one, and then like realized like I don't want to do like it was like learn the rules to know how to break them. The kids who just go up there and then it's like anarchy on stage. It's like you don't know the rules.
Right.
It's subversive if you're bending the rules and you know them and what they are. But if you have no idea, then it's not that fun.
You know, I took it was like a free intro class. And my question to him was, who are you? What that kid asked you. And he said, it's a great question. This is who I am. He had taught Whoopi Goldberg or something like that. And I was like, yeah, I get it. His whole thing was make sure you're doing the setup punch and go for a left turn on that punch. Don't just take the first one. That's our job, is to go way deeper than the average person would and also still make it funny and relatable.
I call it third thought.
That's our job.
Like everyone would, like first Minimum. Thought is like, that's what anyone would think. Second thought's like, if you took a second, you would get it. That's an okay joke. Third thought is like, fuck, like totally caught me off guard. That's great. His thing for us was, because you're teaching like all these different people, and most of them are hopeless, but you've got to teach them all. So it's like, talk about your life.
Yes.
You know, only you have your experiences and deal with the crowd in front of you. You know, don't just rehearse the same set. You're not doing a movie. Like, deal with the crowd in front of you. You got to do crowd work. Do what you have to do. Yeah. Yeah, be present. But none of those people are doing anything.
Nothing.
One of them owns Flappers, I think.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on. Please promote your podcast again, whatever you want.
Jesselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project, JRVP. It's just silly. It's wacky. People seem to like it. And if you like my comedy, people enjoy seeing a different side of me. But
well,
it's very dark.
I've enjoyed this, seeing a different side of you, too.
So
thank you.
So have I.
As always, Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.